Good day, and welcome to Sea to Ski with Sarah and T, putting the P in professionally managed vacation rentals. This is the Vacation Rental Management Professionals Podcast, coming to you from the Outer Banks of North Carolina.
And from the Rocky Mountains of Colorado. I'm Sarah Bradford from Winter Park and Steamboat Springs.
And I'm Tim Cafferty from the Outer Banks of North Carolina and Sandbridge, Virginia. Together, we bring you the first podcast focused solely on professionally managed vacation rentals across the nation, or as we like to call it, Sea to Ski
with Sarah and T.
In the next 30 minutes, we hope you'll join us on a journey as we dive into issues affecting folks like us, the professional vacation rental manager, allowing you to run your business more effectively, make more money, and most importantly, have fun doing it.
Welcome back. Hope everybody had a happy Easter. Tim, did you find any eggs?
We had an epic Easter egg hunt in my yard, as we do every year. The $5 egg was not found. I usually put one with a $5 bill in there. And I hope all the chocolate was found, because last year I found one in like July that the kids had missed. So it's always a fun time.
Awesome. We don't really have Easter egg hunts here because there's still a lot of snow on the ground, but we had a happy day anyway. So if you guys have been listening the past few episodes, this one is going to conclude our three-part series on budgeting. And what's the goal of budgeting? That's what we're going to talk about today. But the goal of budgeting is not to torture your entire staff, although sometimes they feel that way about budgeting, but it's to find out where you're spending your money, and you need to know how much money you're making, and also to question both sides of the equation so you can save more and you can make more. And that, of course, leads to the end goal, Tim, and that's more profit for your vacation rental company. Today, we're going to talk about how you do just that.
Yeah, and that's been the theme of this three-part series, where we squeeze 10% more profit out of the expense side, and we squeeze 10% more out of the income side. And so budgeting is the third. And so in honor of, I'm a big college basketball fan, and we just went through March Madness and the Final Four and the finals and all that. So we're going to call this the Fiscal Four on making and creating a budget. So I'm very excited about this. You know, I love my budgets.
Fiscal Four. And I'm experiencing my own March Madness out here in Colorado. We just had another 50 departures and arrivals and tons of back-to-back. So while you're enjoying all your basketball and your on your couch, Tim, we've got our own March Madness. So, okay, let's do the Fiscal Four. So I'm going to let you start. Let's do the first of the Fiscal Four. And thank goodness it isn't Duke. Go ahead.
No, Duke is not in my four of anything. Sorry, fans. Big Carolina fan. We'll leave that there. But anyway, I think number one of the Fiscal Four has to be setting the mindset of you and your team for budgeting. Because let's face it, nobody wants to do this stuff. I've told the story a few times in the past where I was giving a session at VRMA a few years ago, and we were talking about ROI, return on investment, and we were talking about how you can measure it and make sure that you're getting out what you should be getting out of it when you put something into it. And so I noticed some blank looks in the faces of the people in there. It's probably 100, 125 people in the room. And so I stopped the presentation. I said, okay, for just four grins, raise your hand if you operate on a budget. And four hands went up, and they were all my employees. And so I understand that some folks just, they probably already tuned out when they heard the word budget, but there's not a lot of execution on this. So you have to get yourself in the mindset of setting a budget. And so we use this as a kind of a three-month period where we sort of look at last year and see what worked really well and see what didn't work so well. And we have a manager's retreat where we talk about this. I know, Sarah, you've done retreats before. Have you ever done a budget retreat like I'm talking about, where you kind of set the sail for the next year?
I haven't really done a budget retreat per se. I like the idea of just having managers there to go through this in depth. Our retreats are more all company, and we talk about what worked well, what didn't. So I like that idea. Tell me about what you do at that retreat.
I try to have a theme. As the leader of the group, I try to get somebody can buy into. I've talked about the great game of business before, and we passioned our company around that. one of our themes was the four disciplines of execution, where you set these wildly important goals and you execute and you measure and so on. And so I'll typically will have some kind of a reading assignment for my group, first of all. And so I actually would hand them a book of the four disciplines of execution, for instance, and have them read through that and conceptually understand how is it that their department fits in the greater good of the company, and then what are we going to do next year on the wildly important goals for the company that we all can get behind, whether it is one of the goals I have, for instance, was to establish my own laundry facility. That's a pretty wildly important goal, a WIG, as we would call it. And so everyone kind of gets into that mindset. We will typically go through every department, and everybody will talk about the previous year, what went well, what didn't, what goals were met, what goals weren't met, and then how they might fit in the next year into the wildly important goal. So that's just an example of something we've done in the past.
I love that idea. Two things about that, just side note. One, having offsites, retreats with your staff, whether it's managers or the whole company. If you're not doing that, start. And we could talk more about that in a whole podcast. But the other thing I love about that, Tim, is that you're having them all read the same material and then discussing it, because you can be on the same page, whether it's with budgeting or anything. I really encourage that too. And it doesn't have to be some complicated book, right?
Right.
Those books are easy reads. But then through the year, you keep referring to the same thing, and you all kind of know the inside scoop with those words that maybe the book refers to.
Well, we do, and we actually have weekly meetings, as we'll get into later, as a company, where we talk about profitability, because I want everybody to buy into this, not just the management team, to make sure we're all on board there. But the process from that first retreat, if you will, or first time I hand them a book to the time we come up with a budget is about 3 months. So there's plenty of time in there for them to go back, resonate on this in the departments, and then come back with good numbers as we go through the process. So setting the mindset would be the number one of the fiscal four.
That's great. And we can't leave this number one without a little debate we had before we recorded.
Yeah.
What comes from setting the mindset before number two of the fiscal four is creating the actual budget. You guys always end up, you, Tim, and I know we do too, what is our number? And when we do this, it's more what is going to be our revenue goal? You, Tim, what do you refer to as your number?
Our number relates directly to the amount of properties that we manage. And so invariably, at some point, if our retreat is 2 days, over the some point, I'll just turn around and go, okay, what is the number?
You
know?
Yeah.
So what is that goal going to be for us? We know the average number of weeks per property, which can set the housekeeping, how many cleans we're going to need, and then how many work orders you might need in maintenance, and then how many real estate sales you might need. But you can't go anywhere until you all agree, okay, this is our number. And you can't let it be a number that's a comfortable number either. You want to constantly grow. You're either green and growing or ripe and rotting. That's one of their statements we say around here. And so I'm not going to allow them to have a number that's like five less than we currently have. We need to push for a number that's five or ten more than we currently have. It may be hard to get there, but we're going to get there. And we do not change our budget.
Right, and I do. Yeah. So that's for later, maybe in the podcast.
Okay.
But to finish number one, you got to figure out your number after you set the mindset. You got to know what your high level goal is, whether it's number of properties or revenue. If you don't have that, you can't decide what your expenses or anything else are off of that. So let's go to number two of the fiscal four. And number two is creating the budget. And this is where you guys might be turning us down right now and going, oh, stop, I know how to create a budget. But let's talk about it, because do you? And are we all thinking about creating the budget as effectively as it can be? So just the basics, if you are at a very basic point, is we do our budget in QuickBooks. Do you too, Tim?
We do, yes.
And that's pretty easy to create, you know, income and expense categories. Then each month, you have to put all the income and expenses, the actuals, into those correct categories. I've heard a lot of people create budgets, and then they don't put the actuals in, so there's really no point. It's like setting a goal for yourself, and then a year later going, oh, I didn't lose that 15 pounds. Shoot, I never thought about that again. You got to do that. And then at any time, you can run what's called a P&L, or a profit and loss statement, which shows you how you're doing for each category above and below and the overall profit to date. That sounds basic, Tim, but as you said, I think a lot of folks out there get busy in their life and they don't end up doing that every month. And 6 months later, they go and look at their actual budget versus actuals and figure out they're in big trouble.
Right. And again, back to the example I used before when I was teaching that class at VRMA, I remember a lady in the front row raising her hand saying, "We had an unbelievable year last year. How am I possibly going to expect to do that or better next year?" Well, I've already told you my feeling on this, but at least you have a knowledge of what you did previously, which can move you right into this creation of a budget pretty well. You know you made money, you know how you made money, and you knew what your expenses are, so you can take that and run with it. So I guess the question is, how detailed do you go? I break it. I'll tell you, if there's an expense item that's going to be more than $600 for the year, we actually have a GL category for that. That's pretty detailed.
Tim's budget's 7,000 pages long.
I do have 7 pages of expenses, though, and only 1 page of income.
Yeah, okay, so I have 1 page of income and 2 pages of expenses. Okay. So I guess I'm less detailed. The way we decide it is, can we take action on that item if it goes up or down? So a couple examples for this, and Tim, tell me what you would do here. So for example, like VRBO, I know you barely use them, but when we use them, we have fees that we charge the guest on a VRBO booking, and they're different from our regular fees, so we can see how much we're getting from that source.
Mm-hmm.
Another example, maybe more for you, Tim, is marketing. So we used to have this huge category of marketing, and there's nothing you can do about that. If you see it go up or down, you don't know what it means. So we did break that down into chunks where it doesn't necessarily mean just because it was over $600, we put it in its own GL category. But it was different avenues of marketing that we could make a decision on if it went up or down and look at the effectiveness of it. So why do you have to have one for anything above $600?
Well, I think it goes back to your department heads and how engaged they are. And you indicated about putting the expenses and income in on a monthly basis. I will tell you, if it goes more than a week around here, I mean, it's a daily process for us. And so they do actually want to know, how much did we spend on this particular website that is a driver for income on our advertising? I'm looking at my advertising budget. It takes up a quarter of a page with approximately 17 line items here. And so I have a very detail-oriented marketing manager, as you well know, Sarah, but it does go back to the personality of the individuals. I have another department who is a very big moneymaker for me, and he only has 4 expense items. So it's a culture thing to make sure everybody's on board and they know things are being watched and that our success is tied to what we measure. And it's been said many times, it's trite, but it is said so often around here, what gets measured gets treasured. That's how we approach it.
And you know, the other thing is, when you do it at a more detailed level, I would always say go on the more detailed than the less detailed if you have to decide. And then you can look over time, does this make any sense to split it out this much? But the great thing about a budget over the years is you can compare what you spent last year and the year before and the year before. And have you ever looked at trends across 4 or 5 years? Example is Google AdWords. When we were really small, I'm so embarrassed to say this, but I guess it's because we didn't have good SEO on our website, is we were spending over $70,000 on Google AdWords, and we were really small. And now, if you look at the trend, it's just gone down and down and down, our spend on that, as we've grown and grown and grown, which is a really good trend, right? Instead of you're growing, 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 and you keep spending more and more and more, that's a problem. So now we're below $25,000. So budgets can be good year over year as well.
That whole intuitive thinking is critical. And if you didn't have a budget, you probably wouldn't know that. That's the thing. I'll throw in one other thing here on the whole creation of the budget, and I guess it does go down to tracking as well, and we may touch on it there. But I think we do one thing very unique. I've touched on it here a little bit, and I've mentioned it in other places, and that is that I try to run my company as an open book management company. There's a book I'd encourage you all to read called The Great Game of Business. It's written by a fellow named Jack Stack, and every employee who's ever come here in the last 5 years, that's been required reading to know how we operate our business. Now, Jack Stack was a fellow who worked for International Harvester, and at the time he was working there, the company was losing thousands of dollars a day. And so what they did was they pooled their money as employees, they went to a bank, they got a loan, and they bought the company. And so each of the employees had an ownership stake in the company. Now, I haven't taken it that far. I haven't turned my company over to my employees, but I do give them a stake in the income and expenses. And so it is made for us very highly focused individuals that work here, because we have these P&Ls we read on a weekly basis. We have a thing called a huddle. We have it on either a Tuesday or a Thursday, first thing in the morning or last thing in the day, and we put the numbers right up on the board. This is what reservations was supposed to have made. This is what reservations has made. This is what maintenance was supposed to spend. This is what maintenance has spent. And so it's their meeting. We call it every week. It only lasts 10, 15 minutes. We actually pass the hat to see who's leading the meeting that day. Anybody can ask any question of any department about, are you going to make that number? Or why are your expenses so high? And so that ownership has really helped us from not only creating the budget, meaning that you better have your numbers right because you're going to be tested every week, to the tracking process. And that gets us into the next section.
And Tim, this is one of those moments. I mean, that's incredible. And this might be one of those moments when the listener's thinking, oh my gosh, Tim, you are so on it. I don't know how you track your expenses every week, but you want to tell us? Because I struggle to even get all that stuff in every month to be able to look how it compares. But Tim is having huddles every other day, and things are on big screens, and you're just imagining this ridiculous operation.
I have a Marie. That's how I do it. My accounting, I have two ladies, Tanya and Marie, and they are unbelievably talented, particularly in the QuickBooks vernacular. Instead of letting it pile up, literally, we put our expenses in pretty much on a daily basis. You know, when the bill comes in, we get it paid.
Well, listen, I have a Melina, okay, and she's great too. So yeah. Don't be saying she's not.
I'm not. I wasn't. I think that's. I think you may have been owning that a little more than you should. I was saying.
I'm so defensive today when you and I were talking earlier. But yeah, okay. Well, so that's great. Even if you do it once a month, Tim, wouldn't you say that's a good accomplishment?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Final thing on this number two is how to split it each month. And this is important if you are going to get into this budgeting process and you haven't been as detailed as you wanted to be in the past. You have to look at how to split an amount per month. For example, let's go back to Google AdWords. You can't just say, okay, I think we're going to spend $30,000 on Google AdWords because that's what we did last year, and let's just divide it by 12. Well, you have to look at historically what you have spent there, because for us, for example, we might spend a lot in November, December, January, and then very little in May. And if you just divide all your expenses by 12, you're going to think you're doing fine, and then the big bill comes for something in February, and you're all off track.
Absolutely. It's income and expenses. So, yes, very good. Good point. All right, that brings us to number three, I think it is, and that's best practices on this whole tracking process. We already touched on this a little bit, but every month you have to look at your P&L, folks. Again, I'm giving you a visual image, and one person pointed out on the YouTube video I did with the Spit for Wiley thing, they said, I saw your P&L. It was right there on the left side of your desk, wasn't it, Tim? Yes.
I saw that sitting there.
That was my P&L for both my companies. So I look at it every day. I just can't emphasize how empowering it is when you let your people know, first of all, GL codes. You ask any of my people, what's GL60205? They absolutely know what it is. It's fuel. Because everybody uses fuel. And so they have to code their receipts when it comes in, and the credit card and so on like that. But you have to track it as a top of the food chain, but also across the board. So every department needs to know what their income and expense items are, and they need to track it on a regular basis.
So besides looking at every day, don't worry, I only look at it every month, everybody out there in normal land. Every department head needs to see and discuss their P&L. So one thing I would encourage you not to do is just send it out and say, here's your P&L for the month. It's whether it's you, Tim, or me, or Melina in my world. She meets with every department head and goes over that monthly P&L, and they talk about it. And when you talk about the budget, again, that sounds really boring, but it's not. It brings up all these things like, why is this number look so good? Why is this down? And then you make an action item based on those things, and you feel way more in control of what's going on in your business than you're the only one looking at it and hoping that everybody's going to save money somehow.
Yeah, I would say one other caveat about this whole thing about tracking as well. I want to make sure everybody's clear. I don't provide the whole 10-page P&L to every employee on a weekly basis. We have a thing we call a roll-up. And it is for, quite frankly, highly skilled people in QuickBooks, where you can take certain GL codes and roll them up into a single category. For instance, I wouldn't want people to see what payroll was in another department. and maybe create some kind of friction inside the entity that you don't need. So we have these roll-ups that categorizes our main departments. We have reservations, we have housekeeping, we have maintenance, we have marketing, we have property services, we have real estate sales, and then we have the company dumping ground is all of the office stuff, power, rent, insurance, all that stuff gets dumped into office. And of course, you don't really make any money in the office area. We give that to the stars and the reservations teams or whatever. But it is important, though, is what I guess I'm saying, is that that P&L review makes sense to whoever's looking at it. And they don't need to get caught up in the minutiae of 8 pages of detail. Our roll-up is literally a half a page long. And so people can look at it and see, oh, okay, we're doing good, or, ooh, no, we did do better. That's my last comment on that.
On tracking, Tim, I also like to look at how much I have left to spend. So back on that, yep. How you split it between the months. For example, ours is we started in May and we ended in April, just how our world works. So in February, when I see that we're doing well with the category, I like to see how much is left to spend, because then you can go, all right, that seems realistic, or, oh, that's all we have left to spend in that chunk, we're in trouble. Do you do that too?
Well, I do. I'm thinking of one particular one. I have a building maintenance line item, and I want to resurface my parking lot. I know what the cost is going to be, but I haven't made the call yet because I want to see how it's going to turn out. You know what I mean? I've got it in there, but I'm not really completely comfortable going ahead and spending that money. And so, yes, I absolutely do that.
And then the last thing on best practices around tracking process is back to these questions that come up. And besides looking at per team and discussing it, the questions that come up from this tracking are priceless. This is what will save you money. This is what will make you more money. We noticed that our revenue was going over, but our cleaning costs were going under. And you might say, okay, good, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was great news, but we dug into that. We wanted to know why. You know, my GM was like, this is strange. This doesn't make any sense. So we started to look at more reports for the past winter and noticed that our stays in general were longer. So because of that, we were making more money per stay, and the housekeeping costs were actually going down. An interesting trend, and will help us make a goal to keep that going for next year and possibly reduce housekeeping costs.
Fantastic. Well, that brings us to number 4 on our fiscal 4 as we tip our hat to the college basketball season, which is wrapping up. Other big benefits from a budget. Obviously, you can see how you're doing and all those things we've talked about, that, but you can communicate these goals to staff so easily. You can create ways to bonus employees. You're more transparent with your employees. They don't think like you have this private yacht or jet that you go off to your island home in Tahiti. And so these things are really important to make sure you have an engaged and just a really focused staff. I go off here on a little tangent on this, back to the book I mentioned before, The Great Game of Business. What I didn't tell you was the punchline on that book, and that is that every employee that works for me and every employee in this book had what they call a profit share pool. And so I have let every employee in my staff know that they have this pool of money available to them. If we hit quarterly numbers, we're just ending Q1. I have a little secret to tell you. We made Q1. So my staff doesn't know yet. So they're going to get a portion of their profit share pool. We pay 10% of their pool after one quarter if we hit the number. If we hit the number after the second quarter, we'll pay 20% of their pool. If we hit the number after third quarter, they get 30% of their pool. And if we hit the number after their fourth quarter, they get 40% of their profit share pool. So it keeps everybody focused all year round on the next number. And so huge benefits from having a budget that we would never be able to do if we didn't do this stuff.
That's great. And once again, Tim's taking it to the next level. We bonus based on net income.
Well, that's,
I like
good too.
Bonusing on base on net income, because it's like, yeah, okay, you one department might have saved some money. That's great.
Right.
Or you one department might have had a lot of reservations, but we were way over in this other area and we didn't make any money, so I'm not going to give you a bonus. I do feel strongly, though, that you should have a bonus program with your staff. It keeps them going to the end. We're in a transient location where a lot of people don't stay for 10 years. At least getting them through your peak season with that carrot at the end is great. And then I can't emphasize how important it is your staff sees your whole budget. other than payroll rolled up, but they need to see the whole thing at least once, right? They need to mm-hmm. understand how all the parts fit into another, into the whole. I don't think that a lot of companies share that with staff. And so they feel more ownership, whether you have profit sharing or bonuses or how you do it. So,
well, I think that payroll point is really good, too. You obviously don't want to show the minutiae of it, but I think it is important that they understand. Like, for instance, I was talking to one of my frontline employees who couldn't understand why we were charging, let's say, $300 to do this particular job when it was only going to take him about 45 minutes. And he was like, Mr. Tim, we only got like 45 or 50 bucks into this job. Buddy, you have no idea what goes on to this. You know, between the cost of the fuel, we talked about this in our last episode about the whole coffee maker thing going to Walmart. There's a lot to running a business. And when mm-hmm. they see up on the board that I have $1 million in housekeeping payroll this year, mm-hmm. that is a sobering number.
Yes. So, or they see how much you have to pay in liability. I think it's yes. good for them to see that once a year. Or to see, like, payroll, there's payroll tax. Like, besides paying you this amount,
right.
I have to pay the government an additional 10%. Did you even know that? I never knew that till I owned my own business.
Yeah.
That's another great benefit. Okay, those are our four.
Yep, so now, so not so hot off the press, but definitely happening, has definitely been happening this past week. And it again brings us back to our friends in Austin, Texas, and around the world, and that's HomeAway. The 2018 listing agreement has come out, and it's got some interesting information in there, Sarah.
Yes. We have not received ours yet. I don't know why. We did for one company, not the other. But according to the new listing agreement, if you want to list on VRBO/HomeAway, even though they've told us differently, we believe, in conferences and other communications recently, this agreement says that you have to let them audit your system periodically, which means they are going to look in there at your data. Is that how you're reading it, Tim?
That's exactly how I read it, and it is so disappointing. And I will take this to the next level. I believe this is completely disingenuous from the top levels of HomeAway and Expedia. They have said one thing, and they have done something else. It is less than 30 days ago that I sat in a HomeAway breakfast conference when one of the executives of HomeAway was up there saying what a complete misunderstanding it was about this whole matchback program, and we were completely misunderstood on this. We would never do anything like this. And less than 30 days later, here we have it. They, at best, have a terrible communications problem within their own organization. If they have someone going out to their trusted partners, as they call us, and espousing this in a room of about 50 property managers, they've made that man look like a fool, is what they've done. And I take this to the highest levels of HomeAway and Expedia. That's how I see it. And it goes very deep where, quite frankly, what I just did may cause some punitive action because we cannot disparage HomeAway in any of our comments. Well, come and get me, guys.
Okay, and for the record, I have not disparaged because I don't want to get kicked off HomeAway. But I would like to publicly ask HomeAway and VRBO to straighten this up and get clear on why we're getting mixed messages. So if they're listening, I'm asking for clarity to understand. Are you really going to look at all of our data? That makes all of us nervous. And if I was a private homeowner, you don't look at the paper on my desk. So why are you doing this to vacation rental owners?
Yep. I read verbatim out of one of their clauses. Number 14 says that they have audit rights. HomeAway may conduct an audit from time to time as it reasonably deems necessary to assess the property manager's performance and fulfillment of its obligations under this agreement to pay HomeAway the costs that are associated with listing on their sites.
Yep. So let us know what that means.
Yeah.
All right. Enough of that depressing topic. We're going to move on to one more thing, Tim, because we need to sum it up, and
yes.
then I'll talk about what's coming next week.
Very good. Yeah, we're excited about the future. So this episode, of course, was the Fiscal Four on the third and last part. Some of you may be cheering there about our whole financial approach to how to run a business. This is about budgeting. And so number one was set the mindset of yourself and your staff for the budgeting process.
And then creating the budget. Obviously, you need to create it once you get your quote-unquote number. Figure out how detailed you want to go. We recommend going more detailed than not. And remember to split it out correctly per month, not necessarily just divided by 12.
Number three was best practices on the tracking process. We gave you a lot of stuff on this, so hard to narrow it down to one part. But you definitely need to have a regular process of entering your expenses and your income in your profit and loss statement. If you use QuickBooks, it's a good product to use this. But look at it at least every single month yourself and share it with your team.
And discuss it. That's what really gets the big issues out. Number four on the fiscal four are the other big benefits from a budget. And that really can be narrowed down to the transparency with all employees, letting them ask questions, have them challenge numbers, have them feel engaged and invest in your company, and then have some sort of, we recommend, a bonus or profit sharing based on net income or goals for their department, however you might do it, so that they feel like they're participating when you hit your numbers. So those are the four. Next week, Tim, we're going to change it up a little bit.
I can't wait. We've been bouncing ideas off each other, and I think we've come up with a good one. You want to cover it?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. So for the next few episodes, and if it's super fun, we'll just keep on going, is we're going to be interviewing other vacation rental owners, because God knows we don't have all the answers.
Clearly.
Clearly. So we hope you tune in for thought-provoking discussions with other industry leaders on how they've creatively solved complex issues we all face. So we'll have a couple topics we discuss with them, just still in our 30-minute space. And then we're going to have this ever-exciting lightning round. What's that going to be like?
Oh, I can't wait. It'll be quick questions that they can answer in one sentence, and they'll be topical. That's all I'll tell you.
Yeah, and they're not even going to know what they are. So this will be fun. If you want the challenge of being on our podcast and be an interviewee and you own or run a vacation rental company, then reach out to us on Facebook or the website. A lot of you know our email addresses. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love for you to be on the podcast too.
We sure would. There's your invitation. You too can be on a podcast. So let us know if you're interested. So that'll wrap it up for this week. Sarah, enjoy your time until we get together again. This has been great, and thanks for tolerating me in my detail on my budgeting.
No problem. You're an inspiration to us all, Tim. Have a good one. See you later.
So long, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Sea to Ski with Sarah and T, Professional Vacation Rental Managers podcast, brought to you by Sarah Bradford of Winter Park Lodging Company and Steamboat Lodging Company, as well as Tim Cafferty of Outer Banks Blue and Sandbridge Blue Realty Services. Together, Sarah and Tim manage more than 600 privately owned vacation rental properties, and both are regarded as experts in the vacation rental management industry. Music provided by Ben Sound. We encourage your participation on this podcast by sharing it with friends, and please feel free to rate and review the podcast on iTunes. Comments or reviews on this particular podcast can be made on their website, seatoski.com, where you can also subscribe to the podcast as well as provide them feedback on this episode or give them ideas for future topics. We look forward to speaking with you next time on Sea to Ski with Sarah and T.